Christina, the session concentrated a lot also on refractory encephalopathy. Recurrent encephalopathy, I think, is quite common. How often are you finding a patient who is truly adherent? You eliminated exacerbating, concomitant risk factors, and they are still struggling with confusion.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I thought the session was really compelling on talking about what really is refractory. And you spoke a lot about, is it really or is it not, non-compliance, precipitating factors. I think it's going to be more often than not a smaller percentage of our patients that's truly refractory rather than episodic, persistent. Is this really, really refractory? And I think it's a low number, but let's just, argument's sake, that yes, absolutely, they're compliant. There's no other risk factors. I would really have to take a look personally and say, is there something else going on though? And one of the biggest factors, and probably something I've had experience with, a competing etiology, would be something neurologic. And so that's where I might consider getting a neurology colleague involved and taking a deeper dive with that than really calling before I really call something refractory, because I think it is really going to be a less common case, to be honest.
Yeah, I see, when we have a patient with, truly refractory HE, I also want to make sure that we get a good abdominal imaging study to make sure that there isn't, a huge splenorenal shunt. I see probably the most common is post-tips, where they have problems and sometimes, we have to decrease go back in and decrease the size of the tips to address that. But I think that, but fortunately I don't think adherence is, the major player when it comes to the truly refractory HE. I think especially when you're adding, when they're already on lactulose, they're already on rifaximin. So you got to kind of look out for the other, red herrings, and their clinical situation.
And just a dovetail, Dr. Rao and Ho-Jung, you can speak to this too. When it comes to splenorenal shunting, how often are you evaluating for that? I mean, our patients always have imaging. So, it's not that you necessarily have to go after that. But, again, argument's sake, they haven't had updated imaging. How often are you evaluating for that? And in what setting? And how often do you maybe pursue embolization? I'm just curious on that.
Yeah. So for us, it's very infrequent. This is your patient who is incredibly adherent. They're maybe taking 5-6 doses of lactulose a day. They're maximized on secondary therapies. They might have a lot of other signs of portal hypertension. And then we're doing cross-sectional imaging to figure out if there's something else that we can do. And they're generally repeatedly hospitalized, or that they call and they're like, I'm they go from mildly confused to in a coma, like, instantaneously. It's just that they're very brittle for their HE. Chunk, same with you?
Yeah, I completely agree. They should be already getting, ultrasounds for HCC screening, but, it's when you have somebody with persistent or refractory, I do get a good dedicated, CT or MRI just to make sure, that they don't have a large splenorenal shunt. Problem is that when you find it, there are few people that you actually want to embolize, right? Because, these are patients with intermediately high, MELDs, greater than 18. Those are the ones that, often have, their MELD is creeping up, the 20s, the low 20s. And so, that you can't really you can't offer an embolization even if you wanted to. And also, just like the session that they discussed, that's not, it's not reproducible as far as the reporting of the splenorenal shunt, because, often they refer to it as collaterals. But if the situation is puzzling, I do go back, to the radiologist and I'm like, hey, can you take a look and can you tell me at least I can have something to explain, the refractory HE, and not focus more on the non-adherent, adherence, because especially when I have patients that are like, no, I'm taking it. I'm having, 2 to 3 bowel movements a day, and am I pushing, having like 3 to 4 bowel movements and risk, dehydration. So I think that's a good, it's good to know if it's present.
Christina, the session concentrated a lot also on refractory encephalopathy. Mm-hmm. Recurrent encephalopathy, I think, is quite common. How often are you finding a patient who is truly adherent? You eliminated exacerbating, you know, concomitant risk factors, and they are still struggling with confusion.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I thought the session was really compelling on talking about what really is refractory. And you spoke a lot about, you know, is it really, or is it not, you know, non-compliance, precipitating factors. I think it's going to be more often than not a smaller percentage of our patients that's truly refractory rather than episodic, persistent. Is this really, really refractory? And I think it's a low number, but let's just, you know, for argument's sake, that yes, absolutely, they're compliant. There's no other risk factors. I would really have to take a look personally and say, is there something else going on though? And one of the biggest factors, and probably something I've had experience with, or you know, it's been a competing etiology, would be something neurologic. And so that's where I might consider getting a neurology colleague involved and taking a deeper dive with that than really calling before I really call something refractory, because I think it is really going to be a less common case, to be honest.